Welcome back to the Better Divorce Podcast. I am your host, Paulette Rico, and I'm here to guide you through the storm of divorce into much calmer waters. So hold tight. Whether you're contemplating divorce, in the thick of it, or just rebuilding post-divorce, I've got you covered. Each episode, we'll tackle the tough topics, share resilient stories, and offer practical, helpful advice to help you navigate with confidence wisely. Remember, you're not alone. I've been there, and so have millions of others. And your brighter future awaits, I promise. Ready to turn a tough time into a time of growth? I know you are. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you find this content helpful, please share it with others who might benefit. Now, let's dive into today's topic. See you soon. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Better Divorce Podcast. I am your host, Paulette Rico, credentialed private family law mediator and certified high conflict divorce coach and author of the book, Better Divorce Blueprint, and the retreat passionate host of Better in Belize Retreats. My next one, May 4th to the 10th, so don't miss it, afterthenarcissist.com. Today, I am going to jump right into a conversation with a phenomenal motivational speaker. His name is Bob Thompson, and you might want to get to know him a little bit better as what Bob thinks. That is what grabbed my attention. So welcome to the podcast, Bob. I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks for having me. It's been a long time. We've been trying to put this together for a while, but life and health got in the way, and finally, here we are.
Isn't that the truth, Bob? It's interesting when I stumble upon people and read their stories and learn more about them. And, you know, we connect, whether that be in person or virtual in these days. You know, life gets in the way, right? So it's already 2024. Hard to believe we're wrapping up January. But now that January is almost in the books, and you're probably listening to this in February. Let's jump in a little bit about what Bob thinks. So without reading your entire bio, Bob lives in the Chesapeake Valley area in Virginia and is a real estate agent by trade now, but he's had a very long work history. And I want you to kind of jump into your transformational story from career to career to career. And the fact that you went through quite the divorce story too. So tell us briefly how you went from your early days to what you're doing now and what brought you from that initial career to what you're doing now that brings you passion.
Okay, so essentially, I was a chemist for 9 years. I worked in a chemical plant. And in probably 2005, I was going back to school, and I'm sitting in freshman chemistry with my own lab coat, with my name on it, my own supplies, and I realized that I was miserable. 12-hour shifts, 15 bosses, the whole nine yards. And something just came over me. So I looked into several different, you know, vocations and things that I felt like I could do or be good at, started buying real estate, and realized that I really enjoyed the hunt, the negotiation, that piece of the real estate, not really owning it, the real estate agent end of it. So my now ex-wife, we will call her, put a 3-year plan together, and we got it done in 2 years. And in 2007, I walked out of the chemical plant and went full-time in real estate. Mm-hmm. And then in 2018, I had 2 heart attacks and a quadruple bypass. And again, and we'll talk later about the persistent progress and the self-check. Using that, I was able to rebuild my life and my business, which had been completely shattered. And I started getting into real estate coaching and mentoring in early 2019. It's something I had been asked to do for a while, but I kind of, let's be honest, were a bit more selfish about it and put it off and put it off and put it off, and found that I really enjoyed it, and have since then, you know, made a transition into motivational speaking and things of that nature. And it's something I always wanted to do, but again, it was a book on the shelf that I just hadn't opened or didn't feel like I could. And I suffer, I wouldn't say suffer, but I have a fair amount of imposter syndrome, and that has been known to keep me back from time to time. So I try to be honest and upfront about that and, you know, eventually, you know, continue to make those transitions and move forward.
Beautifully said. I want to not skip over that poignant comment you made about there was something in you when you were working in the chemical factory world that just didn't sit right. Like you, I don't know whether, like, what was that aha moment when you're in your original career and you just had this inner knowingness, like what was that? Was it something that your head was saying? It just didn't feel right. Was it a whisper that said, Bob, get the heck out of this job? Like what made it? Cause a lot of people ignore that. And I don't want to skip over that. That is so important because you could still be in that job, right? Yeah, I mean, there are millions of people out there that have careers, jobs that they're, I hate to use this word, stuck in, and they stay stuck because, well, that's the job I picked and that's the life I created. That's the one I chose. You know, you own it, right? You know, what do they say? You know, that's, I made my bed. I got to lie in it. I hate that saying. Like, what was it that made you say, I got to listen to my soul?
I had had that job and it was a good job. Paid decently for the time period, good benefits, the whole nine yards. I think, honestly, it was literally, I was going back to school for, at the time, I can't even remember what I was going back to school for all of a sudden. It skipped my, environmental protection. When environmental protection was still fairly new, there really was no diploma course. It was, you could get a 2-year certificate, essentially. And yeah. I was already miserable. And let's be honest, nobody wants to be around somebody that comes home after 12 hours and is groaning and moaning about their job and all of the politics that go involved in it and all of that. So I was already unhappy. And I'm literally sitting in freshman chemistry with, at that point, I'm 30, 31, and I'm surrounded by freshmen in freshman chemistry, and I'm just miserable. And like the light, it literally was just like that. It was like, okay, this is not going to work. I can't see myself doing this for the next 15 years and I'm miserable. I've got to find something else to do. And that's really what sparked it. And it just doesn't work. And it was the greatest thing I ever did. And the best thing, there's never been a prouder moment in my life is walking out of that chemical plant in April of 2007 on my last day. And the fact that we did it in 2 years instead of the original three meant a lot to me also, because I had to be me, and I don't play well with others, whether I hate to say it, but it's true. I don't do well taking advice from 15 different people or being told what to do by people because I'm in a corporate environment and all of that. It just doesn't work for me. And that really was what it was, sitting in that classroom, burning cork with a Bunsen burner. I was like, I'm done. I was transparent about it. I told my boss, I'm like, I'm not going back to that class. I'm done. You know,
I'm getting goosebumps because I had a very similar moment, and most people do, but a lot of people just, you know, push it down, keep pushing it down. When you said this isn't going to work anymore, I had to be me. It being connected and strong enough and resilient enough to fight the external pressure to keep doing what you're doing and make that shift in your life changed the success of the career that you had. So kudos to you for that. It's not easy. A lot of people stay stuck, right? And that moment that you just said, this isn't going to work anymore. I had a very similar situation. I'd been in a job for 10 years and I hated it. And I kept pushing it down and smiling and pretending everything was wonderful. Everything was great. I had the perfect career, the perfect marriage, the perfect family. Who am I to want something different? And I kept denying and pretending to myself. I would even journal about how miserable I was and then close it and put it aside and then reread it and go, yeah, but I can't tell anyone. They'll get so mad. And think of all the people I'll piss off if I be me and I'm really sharing how miserable I am and choosing a career and a life that just felt like somebody else's. It's more common than we realize, right? Do you agree or how do you feel about it?
Definitely. I see it all the time with people that, and I get it and I understand where it comes from. There's so much negative space in the world and we all have our own, you know, imposter syndrome issues or whether or not we feel worthy to move into a different space. And I think that's it's a way bigger problem than I think people realize, if truth be told. The imposter syndrome. That's why I preach, you know, a lot of times to young people, work in the dark, because when I worked at the grocery store and was frozen food dairy manager and took the job at the chemical plant, I had people even then telling me that this is the best job you're ever going to have. And you could have been a grocery manager. And it's ridiculous. And when I left the chemical plant, I had people, you know, again, same thing. This is the best job you're ever going to have. It's 2007. We're in the middle of a recession. There's so much negativity and people are just, I don't understand why they go that direction to where, okay, well, this is a stupid idea and you can't do this and you can't do that. And even when it's something as simple as, dude, I was working at the grocery store and you really think I can't do better than the grocery store. You know, that's ridiculous. And that's why I'm always like, work in the dark, make your moves in the dark, because the more people you tell, the more people are going to tell you that you can't, or they've already stereotyped you into a particular corner. You know, I still have, you know, family members that know me as the same idiot 15-year-old that I was, good Lord, many, many years ago. And they're always going to see me that way because they only see me twice a year. So they don't really know who I am. So I think that's a lot of it. It's a massive problem. And when I have, you know, friends and people on my Facebook that start talking that way, it's that weird mix of you kind of want to shake them, but at the other side, you also want to sympathize because imposter syndrome is a real thing, and not being able to think outside the box or feeling like you can be not necessarily a star, but be successful in your own world and be successful in your own passions. I think that's the key. You don't need to be famous in any way, shape, or form, but you can still be a rock star in your own little thing that you do well. And that's going to give you all the passion and drive that you need.
So true. In the work I do, I feel that those people that drag you down or want to keep you attached to the old you or the old story or the work that you do, the relationships you have, who you identify as, is they feel that if you leave or do better or move on or make a change, they're now admitting to themselves they have to amp up whatever it is in their life that they're truly miserable to. It's this sense of misery loves company. It's all good to commiserate together about how horrible our relationship is or how horrible our family is or horrible our job is or whatever the situation is, because we can all at least wallow in how horrible it is together. But if one person rises above it and changes the story or moves beyond what the tribe wants, whether that's in that chemistry class or at the grocery store, or for me, it was teaching, you know, shuffle ball change, tap classes to 5-year-olds, or, well, they were probably more like 8. It just felt like such a battle to have to argue or show people or demonstrate, or even at least have a conversation about why you wanted something better or different. Most people like when you're miserable because, again, misery loves company. And when you move out of that bubble, it kind of pisses them off.
Yeah. And it's hard to, when we start transitioning and making changes, it's hard to explain to our people why we're doing what we're doing. It's easier to explain it to a stranger than it is somebody that, mm-hmm. you know, like I had somebody ask me one day, point blank at Thanksgiving, as a matter of fact, was like, well, you're doing these podcasts and all of this. Do you hope to monetize this one day? What is the point of doing the podcast? And I had to basically let it out on the table and be like, I do these podcasts because number one, I think they're important. And somebody else decided that they were important and they want me to speak on it. And I want people to learn from my stupidities and my mistakes. And I'm okay with that. And I point blank told him, you know, again, after going through what I've gone through, I don't really care what anybody else thinks at the end of the day. So I'm okay with that. You can, you know, say what you want to say. And he was like, okay, that makes sense. But it was hard. And it was harder to explain that to him, somebody that I've known since he was a child, who his older brother is my best friend. So I've known this person forever. It was harder for me to put into words and be transparent and be open in front of people that I've known forever than it is for me to walk into a group of students at Regent University and tell them and say the exact same thing and say it with confidence. And as Les Brown would say, you know, say it from your gut and from your chest. And I was telling him what I'm saying, and I'm stumbling over my words because there's people in that room whose opinion I do care about. And my best friend is standing there. And it was harder to do that than it is to speak to somebody that you don't know. It's a fascinating thing.
Yeah, it's so true. I can reminisce about many, many conversations I had with an acquaintance or a complete stranger that I could eloquently explain or answer a question or really listen to their situation from a different, fresh perspective versus someone that I knew intimately my whole life, because there's so much baggage or agendas that they have too. That's a very difficult thing. One of the problems in divorce is mitigating those outside influences that are already a part of your sphere of influence, being the nuclear family or extended family, coworkers, et cetera, because everybody knows you or thinks they know you. And explaining something to someone when they believe they already understand something, when they don't, or you haven't taken the time to explain it to them, makes it even more difficult because they don't like hearing what it is you have to say. That explanation to the checkout girl at, or the barista, or, you know, just anybody is like a fresh, clean slate. I can relate to it in many ways. I'd like to jump a little bit into what you mentioned, this persistent progress and self-check. Tell us a little bit about what that is and why it's important for people to have a persistent progress and self-check.
I think the self-check really is a chance to focus on what you really want and what your needs are. And again, I do it in three ways, to where there's the personal self-check. And that's really, okay, what do I want? What am I trying to do? What do I need to get better on? Because I'm not perfect and I screw up and I've been known to yell and scream and act fool. And I'd be the first one to admit that. Especially if I'm having a bad health day, I can get frustrated very easily and kind of start to throw a temper like a five-year-old. Not going to pretend that I don't, you know, but I try to bottle that up, or I try to not do that and make amends for that. And number two, I've kind of started to figure out that if I'm having a bad health day, I just need to stop and just call it a day, because I'm not going to be my best. Financial self-check is, okay, what am I spending all my money on? What I preach to the young people is, if you are loaded with cash on Friday and broke on Monday, you're doing something wrong. So you can still go out and spend time with your people, but okay, go out an hour later, come home an hour earlier. Don't drink as much. Especially if you've got goals and aspirations and you want to do other things. And the professional self-check is, okay, well, if let's say that you like what you do, okay, well, why are you not on the proper track of where you need to go? Maybe there's benefits at your job that you're not aware of because we've never really looked at the HR book or talked to HR. Maybe they have benefits, you know, classes that you can take for free, or they'll pay you back that you're not aware of. Take advantage of any and all of your opportunities that you have available for you. And I think it's important to do that. As far as persistent progress goes, it's just setting little micro goals for yourself. They're your goals. They're not everybody else's goals. I know a lot of people are into morning routines and stuff like that. Well, that doesn't work for everybody. Everybody has different challenges or different things that are going on in their life. So just pick one little thing that you can say, okay, I got this done today. It's not a much to anybody else, but it's a lot to me. And then from there, you build. We forget that successful people, we don't see the journey. Regardless of what people's personal opinion is, or Jeff Bezos or anybody like that, whether anybody likes it or not, the man sold books on the internet and turned it into a billion-dollar industry. Those are facts. I hope to, if I made $1 billion and turned into a jerk, I would hope I wouldn't, but I don't know that answer. I don't know what I would be like. Another big one is Robert Johnson, who created BET. Back in the day when he's buying these studios and he's buying these channels, nobody sees all of the hard work and all of the stress and all of the little stuff that he had to do. And then he created this multi-million dollar empire. Unless we're part of that person's journey, we don't see any of that. And you just have to be patient and take your little steps and do your little thing and count your victories, because they make you feel better, which means you're willing to continue to work and you'll continue to get where you're going eventually. Nobody does it overnight. We only see the final step. We don't see the hard work that goes into it. We just don't.
So many people are quote unquote overnight successes because we, you know, hear about them, or there's some notoriety that we read about or see on TV or hear about through social media, or you read a blog or an article or whatever, you're like, oh, and they've been working at this for 20, 30 years. Their entire life has been getting to that moment. We don't know, or I don't know, how long it took Jeff Bezos to originally take his concept of selling books online to where he is now. I'm assuming it took most of his life. Maybe you know more on that, but no, I don't know of anybody that's truly an overnight sensation. Life is all about moving into your next step and growing. I would never have thought that when I was in my 20s studying journalism and communications in college, that I would have gone through a very difficult divorce and have created a transformational business to help thousands of people avoid court, save a ton of money, and divorce swiftly through the journey, the process, without stepping foot in court. It's just an amazing. If you had said that to me, if you met me in my 20s, I would have gone, what are you smoking? I have no idea what you're even talking about. Wouldn't have been something I even wanted to consider. But stepping into your story and making it an ability to serve others is key. And having gone through your own divorce yourself, going through the whole story, but I don't want to be remiss and skipping over that, because this is really an important part of what's made you a powerful speaker and to motivate people is those two heart attacks that you went through and that difficult divorce, let alone making the decision to leave one career and move into another. So what would you like people to have a takeaway in the best tips that you can give them about your own personal story with having gone through divorce yourself?
Having somebody that is an alcoholic and will not give it up. Mm-hmm. When we had been back and forth with this, and I had been trying to let her know, hey, we've got to change. This is the things that we can do together to make changes. You know, I'll support you and all of that. I literally can remember the day that I told her we were done. Like, I sat her down. I came home 2015. I came home from a real estate conference. I got my first $1 million listing. It was a bank owned property. So she picked me up from the airport Saturday morning. And the reason she didn't pick me up Friday night, because I knew that she would be drinking, and I knew that she wasn't going to leave the house or want to leave the house, and was going to be angry if she couldn't drink because she was going to have to pick me up late Friday night. So I stayed over. She picked me up. We went to the new property first because I wanted to check on, and it's a $1 million listing, which in my market is pretty big time. It may not mean a whole lot out in LA and stuff like that, but in Virginia Beach, Virginia, that's big boy. That's me coming into my own as far as I'm concerned. And she was mad that I had to take pictures of this property. And I'm like, that's a lot of coin coming in our pockets. We're going to win that together. And that Wednesday, I sat her down. I said, things have got to change. I said, I'm unhappy and I would like us to make some changes. And she looked me dead in the eye and was like, I'm fine with the way things are. And I said, okay. I said, I'm going to go get a hotel room and pack a bag for the night. And tomorrow I'm going to my dad's for the weekend. And that's what I did. At the end of the day, you know, I struggled with that for a while because she ultimately chose that bottle over me. At the end of the day, that's what she chose. That's where she had gotten to that point. And I don't know if I could have done anything else to fix it. I know that, you know, we had tried to go to couples counseling and, you know, do the therapy and all the stuff that we were supposed to do, but she couldn't let it go. And I struggled with that for a while. And then I accepted the fact that that's the way it was and there's nothing I could do about it. And I made sure she was, in my eyes, in my opinion, and from what I did on the paperwork, that I did the best I could to take care of her along the way. So at worst case, I knew I could walk out of that with my head held high. And then once all of the barbs and the comments were made, then 6 months later, people were coming to me going, hey, I was wrong. People that were mad at me because they were under the impression that I just walked out and left her, you know, completely out of luck, found out that wasn't the case. And sometimes you just have to keep your mouth shut and let people say what they're going to say. It's just, you know,
yeah.
The biggest thing I can say is make your plans in the dark. I hate to say that. And I say that about a lot. Keep your mouth shut because people are negative. And you can, especially when you're in the middle of a divorce situation and you've got couples that you're close to, you don't know what's being said on the other side. So just make your plans and set it up and just do it. And know at the end of the day, it's going to suck. Let's not pretend that it's not. But you're going to come out the other side of it and at the end of the day, be way happier than you ever would have been if you'd have stayed in your situation. And that's pretty much with anything. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Make your plans in the dark. I love that. I made that mistake myself thinking. I believe that the number one mistake people make in divorce is they trust their spouse to do the right thing. And they feel, well, this is the person I fell in love with. You know, different levels of that, depending on your age and maturity. I've seen very young couples, you know, have one vision of what marriage looks like, and people that marry in their 50s and 60s, marriage has a different picture, but they do trust their spouse to be that go-to person that's always going to have their best interest, that's going to always have their back, and it's going to be a team, and we're going to prioritize the marriage and each other. And when that doesn't happen, marriages are hard to stay put. And when your wife chose the bottle over the marriage and the bottle over you and the bottle over pretty much everything else in your life, you had to make that very difficult decision of either I can, you know, lower my standards and stay in a marriage that's painful and dysfunctional and damaging, or I can do something to make sure that the next chapter of my life is healthier. And like you said, it sucks. There's no, pardon our French, there's no easy way to look at it, right? But when then you say, well, I'm going to trust my spouse and we're going to have a conversation and we're going to be able to come up with an agreement or a plan. And if you share too much, like Bob said, you know, working in the dark isn't always a bad thing. Now, it does sometimes help to have an expert with you, definitely, you know, make sure that you have that. So you're not just living in solitary confinement in a bubble of fear and feeling frozen, because that can also have the analysis paralysis effect when you don't make any decisions because you are terrified of making a mistake.
That's the beauty of the world that we live in. And I think people don't understand that when I was growing up, your world, your friends, your neighbors were all of that. You couldn't just, if you lived in a small town, those are the people that you were stuck with, because most of us aren't going to get up and, you know, drive to California. You know, now we have all of this internet. I can do unimaginable things, and I can bring in so many people that with Again, like your podcast, if I'm searching online for something, I can find it. And there's this world out there that exists. If I wanted to be a screenwriter, I could join screenwriter groups. And these people could either tell me, okay, Bob, your screenwriting is crap and you need to stop. Or, hey, maybe you have a knack at that. But I can find that out that where 30 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to do that. If I'd have gone to a local divorce meeting, it would have been at the local church where half of my friends and family would have seen my car and known what was going on, to where now I can talk to anybody in this entire world. I can listen to podcasts the same way that I enjoy listening to other people's podcasts and Les Brown and things of that nature. There's so many tools that are available in this world to motivate us, keep us going, and we're getting all of this quality, in a lot of cases, free knowledge that we can get to where, let's be honest, when I was growing up, it was the Yellow Pages and Encyclopedia Britannica and the World Book and the local library. And I think folks forget that. I mean, obviously, I don't at almost 52, but that's the beauty of where we are now. And I think that also says a lot to the divorce statistics and stuff like that, because those options weren't available in the 60s and the 70s. And if you're, and a lot of times, if your husband was going out and getting drunk and then coming home, you just had to deal with it. There was no, it wasn't a thing, or you would be shunned by your people, your church, or whatever the case was. And now you have all of these options available, and you can put your foot down and say, I'm done, and walk away. And there's nothing wrong with that. And there's, you'll find who you're eventually, hopefully find who you're looking for and who's going to be that person. I got a buddy of mine whose mother's been married 5 times, and the first 4 marriages were in and out, and the fifth one has stuck for almost 30 years. And we always used to make the joke, well, your mom found somebody that could put up with her, or not, or put up with her, or love her enough, whatever you want to call it. And sometimes you just got to keep moving on, unfortunately.
You can also look at it the other way, though, that practice makes
That
perfect.
is
Maybe
true.
the first
That is
four,
true.
she had to learn what didn't serve her,
Yeah.
and letting go of something that wasn't right for her. I remember I got married in 88, and there was, we had we did not have cell phones. We still used what were those things called?
Pages.
Pay phones.
Yeah. Yeah, papers and
And you were fancy if you had a push button phone. There were still rotary phones, and
no, that's cool.
you had if you had a push button phone, you were upper middle class. So I remember growing up, we had one phone in the kitchen that was dial, and I think there was an extra phone in my parents' bedroom that you got to use on special occasions, and then down in the basement. My mother had a phone that was for the business, and that was it. And research was, like you said, encyclopedia, the library, a gossip, experts. But when I got married in 1988, I started to read a lot because I was hungry for knowledge. And there was a bookstore down the street from us, and it was Walden Books, which has since gone out of business. But I used to go to the self-help department, or the relationship or marriage department, and or section, I guess it would be called, and sit on the floor because they didn't have chairs in coffee shops and bookstores back then. It was just you went and bought a book and you left. But I didn't want anyone to see me, so I would look through the books and I read as much as I could. I couldn't buy some of them. They were, all about marriage and relationships. I didn't want anyone to know I was studying or trying to figure out what to do or feel comfortable in my marriage. So, that was where we were. Now, years later, 37 years later, but be careful, you can't trust everything you read on the internet. So, it's that balance between assuming, well, I found it on the internet, it must be true. Just like you read it in a book, it must be true. So do your research and make sure that you find the right professionals to help you know that you're not crazy, you're not broken, and getting the courage to make the plans in your life, whether you do them in the dark or you do them on your own, make sure that you feel supported on that journey. So what's the best way for people to find you and learn more about your work and follow you?
They can find me at whatbobthinks.com. We've got a new course and a new book coming out called Want More, Take More, where there's a video series, there's a course, there's a consultation factor involved in it. And they can pretty much find me on all of the social medias at What Bob Thinks. You know, unfortunately, as we know, it is, you know, it's a modern world. So TikTok, Instagram, what, you know, I feel silly even mentioning that because we grew up so differently. But yeah, I'm there on the Instagram, whatbobthinks.com, Facebook, you know, LinkedIn, the whole nine yards. So, and quite honestly, they can always send me an email, reach out, send me a, you know, call me. I'm, obviously, I'm a real estate agent also. So my information is quite public and I'm still one of those people that answers the phone. So I have no problem. And sometimes I like getting random emails and random phone calls to be like, hey, I heard what you did on this or what you said on this podcast, and I really appreciated it. And thank you for that. I absolutely love that. And I'm always here to try to help out and do what I can. Or worst case, I find by reaching out to people, they can point us in the proper direction. So in my case, I could reach out and go, well, I don't have that answer, but I can send you over to the Better Divorce Podcast and maybe you can get your information there, you know, something of that nature. And I think it's important to have those people that may only be in your life a short time, but can connect you to the next best step.
Exactly. I love it. WhatBobThinks.com. You can find him there. He's full of stories and skills that can help you improve your life, having gone through divorce himself and learned to find that little voice in himself that learned what was best. So make sure it's a better situation and, of course, a better divorce. I'll see you guys next time. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining me today. If you were inspired by today's episode, please share it with a friend or a loved one. My hope is you feel empowered to take some action, no matter how big or small. Action that allows you to step out of the chaos and thrive on your own terms. If this podcast added any value to your day, please review it on iTunes, Spotify, and Apple Podcast. Until next time, keep thriving in the chaos.